Welcome to Heart with Anna, featuring your host, Anna Jaworski. Our program is a program designed to empower the CHD, or congenital heart defect, community. Our program may also help families who have children who are chronically ill by bringing information and encouragement to you in order to become an advocate for your community. Now, here is Anna Jaworski.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the host of Heart to Heart with Anna. We are in Season 8 of Heart to Heart with Anna. Our theme this season is care for adults with congenital heart defects, and our show today is considerations for non-cardiac surgeries for adults with congenital heart defects. Our guest today is CHD warrior David Franco. David Franco is 49 years old and was born with a ventricular septal defect, or VSD, pulmonary stenosis, and congenitally corrected transposition of the great arteries. At the age of 5, David was sent to the University of Alabama, Birmingham, to have his VSD closed by Dr. John Kirkland. He also received an implanted pacemaker. David had a second open-heart surgery at 27 to replace his pulmonary valve and add a pulmonary conduit, allowing for more oxygenated blood going through his body. The surgery was successful, but David suffered a stroke during this procedure. He also received an implanted cardioverter defibrillator, or ICD. Since 2006, David has undergone 3 separate major surgeries that were not cardiac in nature. In all 3 surgeries, he had to get cardiac clearance from 2 separate cardiologists, his pediatric cardiologist and his electrophysiologist, due to his ICD. 2 of the 3 surgeries required general anesthesia, so a pediatric anesthesiologist was also consulted. Welcome to Heart with Anna, David.
Thank you very much for having me, Anna. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, first of all, welcome back. I'm so happy to have you back. My longtime listeners may remember you from when you were on a show in Season 3, and you were on with Carol Raimondi talking about living with CCTGA.
That's right. I had a wonderful time sharing my experiences and actually listening to Carol's story with a transposition, and it turned out that it was very similar to mine. It was a great experience.
Yeah, it really was great. Like you, my son has also had operations aside from his open heart surgery. So I'm glad you can come on today and talk to us about non-cardiac surgeries and the considerations that we have to take. So can you tell me about the first 2 non-cardiac operations you had, what they were, and how old you were when you had them?
Certainly. Believe it or not, I made it till the age of 38 before I had a non-cardiac surgical procedure. So I had my open heart surgeries. I lived my life as a CHD patient, and I already had my stroke. So in 2005, at the age of 38, I had an EPL repair. And what the EPL is, it's the extensor pollicis longus. It's a tendon that runs from your thumb and attaches itself to the forearm. Basically, I had a camping accident. I punctured it. And that was my first non-cardiac surgical experience ever. And my second was 3 years later in 2008 at the age of 41 when I had an ACL tear, the anterior cruciate ligament in my knee, and they discovered a cyst and they removed that at the same time. Again, both of these surgeries were later in my life after my open heart surgeries. I'm not including my dental procedure, which I had my wisdom teeth removed. But other than that, I was pretty lucky to get through life with no appendicitis or a broken bone that required surgical intervention or even tonsillitis, considering I'm a CHD person.
Yeah, that's actually fairly remarkable, David, especially since you're a guy. I have 2 sons, and I know how guys can be very athletic or can be very physical. So it's not uncommon to have broken bones or to have accidents where non-cardiac surgery might be warranted. So,
right. It's very easy to break a bone.
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty amazing.
I'm lucky to have made it this far again.
Right. 38 before you had your first non-cardiac surgery aside from dental procedures. Wow. So what was your biggest concern when you knew you had one of these upcoming surgeries? It sounds like both of them were planned surgeries. Neither of them sound like they were emergency surgeries. So what was your biggest medical concern, David?
Well, it's quite amusing, the story behind my EPL and my ACL surgeries, because I guess the best answer to the question would be, I needed to find the right doctor for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a doctor who would understand the cardiac side that I had already inherited and the surgery that they were good at and going to be doing. Mm-hmm. So when I had the wrist surgery, that was 2005, it wasn't an emergency, as you said, and I was given a list of surgeons. At the time, I was very fortunate to still be seeing my cognitive therapist who was working me through my stroke. Still to that date, it was 13 years post-stroke, but I still needed to see the cognitive therapist. Her husband is an ER nurse, and he came up with some good contacts. I found a great hand surgeon who was a former plastic surgeon, and that really put me at ease. So I think finding the right surgeon for your situation is the most important thing. Next, I was concerned that my cardiologist was right on top of this and I would have clearance all the way through. That is the issue I think that I have to actually deal with at this point, is getting those cardiac clearances, making sure the surgeon who cuts me knows what they're doing with not just with their surgery, but also with how to take care of me as a CHD patient.
Right. And I think that's a really good point. And luckily for you, you live in a big city. You live in Austin, Texas. So you have a lot of surgeons in that city that you could actually choose from. I think it's a little bit more difficult when you live in a smaller town, like what I do, to make sure that you have the right surgeon. You might actually have to travel to a bigger town, wouldn't you think, David?
That's true. And in fact, even in a larger city like Austin, I've had a problem, and I'll explain with my ACL surgery. I tore a ligament playing basketball or running, and I went to the ER, and it was an emergency, so they gave me referrals. And the referrals, I chose one of the three doctors that they gave me. Well, it turned out that this doctor ordered an MRI for me, and I said to the doctor, I can't have an MRI. The doctor walks out of the room. I guess he spoke with one of his colleagues. He came back in the room and he said, I think you need to see someone else. So even in these large cities, we have doctors that are not aware of our situations. To be honest with you, I was astounded that he did not know I could not have an MRI because of my defibrillator.
Right, so that seems kind of fundamental.
And it can easily pass by if I didn't mention anything, which I think insulted the surgeon. And that's fine. I had to look out for myself. Certainly wouldn't be good to have an MRI in my situation, especially 10 years ago.
Right. It's good that you were well enough aware of what was going on, that you could be your own advocate and let them know, wait a minute, this isn't going to work. So I was wondering if you had any complications from your surgery. That could have been a major complication, but you prevented that, so that was good. Does that mean that you decided to go to a different city to have that ACL surgery?
No, I did not. I chose a doctor who my brother had seen, and because I had developed a relationship with the doctor, my brother had an ACE surgery by the orthopedic surgeon, and because I drove him, I kind of struck up conversations. We got to know each other, and he knew me, and that's how it fell into place. It might have been a stroke of luck that it happened that way. I'm glad it did, certainly, because I found the right guy to do the right thing. Of course, I still had to jump through hoops to get the actual cardiac clearances because he really wanted to rush the surgery and get it done ASAP. But I did go to a surgeon here in the city. I just had to do my own little research.
Okay. So you had those two surgeries. Were there any complications from those surgeries?
I had no complications. The reason for that is simply following the doctor's orders. Now, granted, something could happen out of the blue that causes a complication that has nothing to do with the way I reacted after surgery or another, something I did after surgery. Something could happen, yes, but in my case, I had no complications. I will say, though, it was just a long rehab. That's another thing I attribute to my rehabilitation from the whole non-cardiac surgery, was the fact that I did do the rehab And I know a lot of people who have surgeries, let's say on their knees or on their wrist, like I did, don't go to rehab. I couldn't do that. I would have to go to rehab. I couldn't move my hand after my first surgery. And it took the therapist to actually get me to physically move my hand. Although it was painful, it was certainly worth the price and the process that I went through.
Well, right, especially since those of us who know you're a musician. You need your hand.
I was 6 weeks in a cast, and that was the hardest time I think I ever had.
Oh, so, yes, exactly.
It was my left hand and my fret hand. So actually, I do have to say I probably wasn't in the mood to play guitar, even though I wanted to, just because I think my wrist accident was the most painful thing I've had in my life. And that's including cardiac surgeries. The hand seemed to be so sensitive, and that spot where I actually penetrated and cut the tendon, they would have to massage in rehabilitation after the surgery. And they called it the zinger spot. And I tell you, every time they would touch that, I would feel a lightning strike from my toes all the way to my spine.
Oh, ouch.
So, and I don't mean to be too graphic, I'm sorry, but that's what happens. It was
right. The
complications don't happen if you seem to want to go through it. I really was very persistent, I suppose.
Wow. Well, it sounds like, despite the fact that it was painful at times, the rehab and following doctor's orders ended up with a great outcome. And that's a real positive note for us to end on, David. So let's take a quick commercial break, but don't leave yet, because coming up next, we'll talk to David about his most recent non-cardiac surgery and what happened to him. So don't leave. We'll be right back.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, A Handbook for Parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Welcome back to our show, Heart to Heart with Anna, a show for the congenital heart defect community. Today's show is Considerations for Non-Cardiac Surgeries for Adults with Congenital Heart Defects. Our guest is CHD warrior David Franco. He is a congenitally corrected transposition of the great artery survivor, and he lives with an ICD. We've been talking to David about two non-cardiac surgeries he's had, but now I'd like to turn my attention to his most recent non-cardiac surgery. So, David, tell us about your third non-cardiac surgery and what it was, why you needed it, and how it turned out for you.
My third non-cardiac surgery, and hopefully my last, was an inguinal hernia, and it was on my left side. And it was actually the most serious non-cardiac surgery I think I've had, only because it was actually in the gut. I was very concerned. It started out as just a pain, and it developed where I knew it wasn't just a pulled muscle. So I went to my primary care specialist. They directed me immediately to the emergency room for a CAT scan. And the CAT scan showed, although their hernia hadn't been strangulated, in other words, the intestine hadn't slipped through the musculature, I was very close to that. So they wanted to get me in surgery as soon as possible. As soon as possible being within 10 days or 2 weeks, Right. Which I did. And I did have a little bit of complications with that surgery. That was not general anesthesia. That was actually through a scope. However, because of my CHD, they were concerned about the gas they had to pump in to let the scope flow through without tearing anything. And my cardiologist got an anesthesiologist from the Children's Hospital to take care of me. Fortunately, it was a pediatric anesthesiologist because he had to stop the surgery twice because the return blood flow from my leg wasn't sufficient. They put a tourniquet on my thigh, and he actually would hold the blood back so he could actually get the scope in.
Wow, it sounds scary.
Well, he wanted to go in through my belly button, which he did, and he went in through my left side. But because the anesthesiologist was seeing poor blood return from the leg, the surgeon opted to go in through the right side, so he didn't have to stop the blood as much on the left side and allowed the blood flow. So I had a lot of bloating, gas in my stomach, and although that does go away right away, I still had a lot of irritation. The doctor had made 3 insertions in my belly, one through my belly button and one through the left and one through the right side. And because he had to go from the right side all the way over to the left side to fix the hernia, it just caused a lot of irritation.
Right.
So, and then I had issues with medications afterwards. I wouldn't say they were complications, but when you go through a gut surgery like that and you try to take painkillers, you make a potion that you don't want because I was already stopped up from the drugs they had initially given me. Mm-hmm. But then if you add painkiller to that, it not only messes with your mind, it kind of doesn't help your GI tract.
Right.
And your whole alimentary canal, the system, if you will. So that was a little bit of a complication that I had.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it. It sounds very uncomfortable, David.
I immediately stopped the painkillers, and it worked itself through. It's a pain that I'm not used to. I don't really have stomach problems or gut problems. And when you have a pain in a different place, sometimes maybe if you sleep with it and you get a crick in your neck, or it's annoying. Right. So that's exactly just what it was. It wasn't too bad. It was mostly annoying.
Right, right. So what was the most frightening thing about needing surgery of any kind, David?
Thank you very much for asking that, because the most frightening thing about that was the fact that when I had my first surgery, which was my hand surgery, they made me actually write on my arm the hand that they wanted to repair. And of course, I knew in the back of my mind that mistakes could be made. And that's something that always makes me nervous. There can always be complications, no matter how good a surgeon is.
Mm-hmm.
The knee was the same thing. They asked me, which knee are we going to be operating on today? And I had to put an X on my left knee because that was the knee they were doing surgery on. So I went into surgery feeling a little bit nervous from the first time. And then when they did my knee surgery the second time, when they did the same thing, you may think it puts you at ease, but right before they put you under and they make you mark your leg or your arm, it kind of makes you think twice. So those are the things that concern me. I suppose getting my doctor involved really helps also. When I know that I have my surgeon who knows what I can handle, and my pediatric cardiologist, who's not a surgeon, but he knows exactly what I should handle, what I can handle, it really makes some difference. And lastly, I'd like to say about the hernia surgery, it was in 2012, and this was after I had actually been told that a heart transplant was needed. So that's why my pediatric cardiologist was able to step in, and he wanted a specific anesthesiologist for that procedure. I'm not on a transplant list or anything. Because of my transposition, I will need one eventually. It's not in the foreseeable future. In fact, I'm trying to keep my own heart as long as possible, as I always say. The point is, I got basically a little bit scared when they made it aware accidents can still happen. And I knew that going in.
Well, it's interesting that you said that because, as you know, my husband is an operating room nurse. And he has talked to me about the new protocols that they have in place to try and reduce any accidents from happening. And one of the things that they always do before every single case is exactly what you said. They go through one final time before they put the patient under and double check, this is what surgery you're having, this is the arm or leg or wherever it is that you're having it. It's just one final check to make sure that everybody is on the same page and everything is going to be done right. But it's interesting to me that you say that made you nervous, because I know from my husband's perspective, from the nurse's perspective, that this is one additional step that they take to make sure that everybody is on the same page and that mistakes will not be made. I just find that really interesting. But it sounds to me like what eliminated some of the concern was coordinating your care with an entire team. Is that true, David? Did I hear you right?
Exactly. That is exactly correct. I had to get both of my cardiologists involved. Most surgeons really will ask, can I cauterize the wound? That's the main question they always ask, because I have an ICD.
Right.
Not because I'm a CHDer, but right. can I use electricity on the guy?
Right.
And I suppose the other feelings that the surgeons may have is, will I get shocked if something happens during the surgery? How do I ground him? How do I ground myself?
It's good that you're aware that that might be a question that they have, and that's why you coordinate so those doctors are communicating with each other, because you're going to be out. It's not like you can help them anyway, right?
Exactly. And yes, hearing it from a professional really puts me at ease.
Right.
If I don't have to explain it, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes perfect sense. And I really admire the way you were an advocate for yourself and you did take care of coordinating the communication with your entire care team. Well, so let's take a quick commercial break, but don't leave yet, listeners, because when we come back, we're going to find out from David what advice he has for other survivors who might be undergoing non-cardiac surgery. We'll be back in just a moment.
Anna Jaworski has spoken around the world at congenital heart defect events, and she is available as a keynote or guest speaker for your event. Go to hearttoheartwithanna.com to learn more about booking Anna for your event. You can also find out more about the radio program, keep up to date with CHD resources and information about advocacy groups, as well as read Anna's weekly blog. Anna wants you to stay well-connected and participate in the CHD community. Visit hearttoheartwithanna.com today.
Welcome back to our show, Heart to Heart with Anna, a show for the congenital heart defect community. Today's show is Considerations for Non-Cardiac Surgeries for Adults with Congenital Heart Defects, and our guest is CHD warrior David Franco. David is a CCTGA survivor, and we've been talking to him about three very different non-cardiac surgeries that he's had and how having a coordinated care team helped to eliminate some of the stress that he went through and how his surgeries were very successful. So David, you are not only a great survivor with your cardiac problems, but you've survived three non-cardiac surgeries as well. So why don't you tell us the biggest lesson that you've learned from having all three of these surgeries?
I'd just like to touch on the fact that, and we've mentioned it in our discussion, coordinating between doctors. I couldn't have done this without getting the proper approval from my cardiologists. But I'd also like to add that I had to do a little bit of my own research to find out who would be the best doctor for me. And I had to go through a couple of doctors, but that's fine. I found the right doctor who made me feel good, who I worked well with. And that's part of the equation. That's definitely the biggest part.
I think that's really good that you mentioned that you had to go through a few doctors. I think that some people are maybe afraid of hurting someone's feelings, or I don't know, we're so used to thinking that the doctors are the authorities. But nobody is an authority on your body like you are. Isn't that right, David?
That's correct. If I hadn't have said something the first time through, I probably would never have had the MRI done, but what good would that have done for me? Yes, you do have to kind of except the fact that you might disappoint someone, but that's the way it is. You're looking out for yourself. You're priority number one. It's your surgery, and you need the best for you.
And I have a number of friends who are surgeons, and I know from talking to them that their number one priority is to do no harm and to be there for their patients. So I think that they want that good working situation also. So I think your search for having the right doctor makes it easier for the doctors too, because it really is a yin-yang situation, don't you think, David?
That's true. In fact, if you do a little bit of research, you can actually find out information that you can strike up in a conversation with them. Like, for example, where they went to school. They always like to talk about that. They like to talk about what they got into. I find if I develop a relationship, even with a new doctor or surgeon, it seems to ease the relationship that we have into something more solid a little bit more easily than as if I went in without my notepad, without my questions and statements that I was going to make, because I have to look out for me. I am concerned about other doctors' feelings. However, as I said, we have to look out for ourselves, whether we're advocates or not. We're our first priority. We really are the most important thing.
Right. And I like what you said. It sounds to me like when you go in and you visit with your surgeons, you immediately try and develop a rapport with them. You're creating a relationship.
Yes. I always seem to have a connection somehow, somewhere. I'll find, oh, I know somebody who went to see or went to that school. There's always something in the conversation that you can both connect on. And that seems to be a great way to start things. The second thing I will say is I will always go into any doctor's office with possibly a sheet full of questions and statements that I will ask the doctor. And when doctors see that, I think they really appreciate the fact that a patient goes through this and tries to get the information conveyed as completely as possible.
Right.
Because I can't think of everything in the office while I'm there. Right. So that sheet of paper really helps.
Absolutely. Well, it shows you did your homework, David.
I try.
Right. I think all of that's terrific advice. So what can family and friends do to help CHD survivors when they're facing non-cardiac surgeries? How can we help?
Well, I think the best thing that supportive people can be is first to be there, to understand that, okay, our thoughts are with you. I understand that. Also, I was very appreciative that I had a neighbor that cooked a meal for the night that I came home. My wife was actually waiting in the hospital and drove me home. We weren't going to pick up fast food on the way home, so somebody actually made us a nice casserole dish, and we just heated it when we got out. So that helped a lot. To be honest with you, after the surgery, I needed rides to rehab. I couldn't drive with a knee in a boot or a hand that was almost rigor mortis for 6 weeks in a cast. So getting rides from people helped. Hearing positive feedback from other people and possibly their experiences also helps me along in understanding, okay, I'm at a good spot. I'm where I should be, or I really need to have this looked at. Something's wrong. There are a number of things that I'm still learning as I go, so I can't possibly tell you everything, but I think just being there, asking questions, sets the patient post-surgery at ease as much as they can be.
That makes perfect sense. Whether you have a heart defect or not, when you have people who are there for you, this is what community is all about. And this is what I love about the CHD community. We are online with each other, and I may not be in the same town as one of my friends who's having surgery, but I certainly can pray for that person or send positive healing thoughts that person's way. And if we are in the same town or close enough, then I love your idea. Take a meal or offer to drive that person to rehab or to a doctor's appointment, especially when they can't do it themselves. A lot of times, right after surgery, you're on a bunch of medications that make it unsafe for you to drive. So having somebody else there makes a big difference, don't you think, David?
That was really a perfect ending to my surgical experiences because I always had a good support system after the fact. My neighbors are very supportive. I have family in town, and phone calls help too. Having that support system, as you said, that community available, really makes it so much more easy. And my recovery also. You mentioned being on drugs. I didn't even think of that when I had my first post-op moon checks. I couldn't drive myself, and I had to get other people to drive me. Thankfully, people, as I said, from church or the neighbors came by and would offer their services, and I was a mess after a couple of those surgeries, so I was very grateful. I don't think people understand you can be as healthy as anything, and you don't have to understand, but just being there for someone who needs a person to give you a ride, or if you have a question, to answer that question, to be there supporting that person really helps. And we're not looking for pity. It really does help to have a support group that gives you true support as opposed to trying to avoid the situation.
Right. And you don't have to worry about saying the right thing, just being there. Actions speak louder than words, wouldn't you think, David?
Exactly. I will say there are times when I've been in the hospital for extended periods of time, and I don't like visitors, to be honest with you. However, I am at the point where I will accept visitors because I need them at times, and I have learned over time that people want to visit you. You need to actually let people do that because that's what they really want to do. That's what they're best at. And you need to accept that. Yeah, I had to let go and let it happen. And that was fine with me.
Right.
Accepting help from others is very difficult for some people. And again, it's one of those things where you just have to let go, understand that it's what they want to do, and let them do it.
I love that, because one of the things that I've learned as I've gotten older is that whereas it's very easy for me to give and give and give, it's not always easy for me to take from others. I don't know if it's because of my pride or my independent nature, but when you don't let somebody do something for you, you're preventing them from sharing their friendship with you. And when I started to see it that way, then I realized, wait a minute, I do need to just let go, like you just said, and let them do for me so that I can be there for them when they need me. Because it really is a give and take when you have a friendship. So I love that.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I love that. And it is hard. It is hard to be vulnerable and let people do things for you, especially when you're very independent. But when we do let our guard down and we do let people in, then they can let their guard down with us when they need us. So it's a win-win situation, but that doesn't mean it's easy.
No, it's not. It's just a little bit out of my comfort zone,
right,
and maybe a lot of people's comfort zones, but it's fine. Yeah. It'll work through.
Right. I think so, too. I think this was a great show, David. You shared wonderful experiences and some great advice. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, that does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. Please find and like us on Facebook. Check out our website, hearttoheartwithanna.com, and our Cafe Press Boutique. Follow our radio show on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you've been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host Anna Jaworski, can be heard every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time. We'll talk again next week.